Do you see any checks on your power on the world stage? Is there anything that could stop you if you wanted to?
Yeah, there's one thing, my own morality.
Uh-oh. If that's all that can stop him, we're in trouble. Thankfully, there's us.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
We can stop him.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
We will stop
him. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
Says me.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Ain't gonna be easy though. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the public airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me. From bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. Yes, we are back. Donald J. Trump, has now been in office for a full year of his second term. The city of Minneapolis is under siege by some 3,000 armed and deadly militarized federal ICE and CBP officials on the ground, far outnumbering the combined total number of state and local law enforcement officials in 10 of the largest Minnesota counties, comprising the Twin Cities region and its suburbs, with some 1,500 U.S. military troops now said to be on standby for possible deployment by the President of the United States to the American city. NATO, humanity's largest and most successful alliance in all of human history, is now facing the very real prospect of falling apart for good, thanks to Donald Trump ending the post-World War II rules-based order across the globe due to Trump's increasing threats to take control of Greenland and his tariff threats against our trade partners. But that idea of taking control of Greenland, a NATO ally and territory of our former, at least, top European allies of Denmark, is just roiling the world today. And on Tuesday, in response to all of this madness, the American stock market followed the lead of the European markets by falling over a cliff, with the Dow plummeting almost 2% at today's close, and both the NASDAQ and S&P 500 plunging more than 2% in a single day. It was a bloodbath. Enjoying the golden age of America yet? Think you and the nation can take three more years of this? Can you take three more years of this, Desi Doyen?
Well, listen, I think we can take it. We will do what we can to make it better.
Well, we will see. We will see if we can make it. We will see if we have to make it. We're not in Kansas anymore.
True.
And people sure do come and go quickly around here, but we will see. As far as people coming and going, we, the people, will have a say about at least some of those people this year. So I guess, like Dorothy, we're still heading down that yellow brick road. And at the end of it, we'll either help melt away the wicked witch, or we'll end the rule of the very weak and cowardly man behind the curtain, or however you'd like to extend that tortured metaphor. But that happens, of course, when the nation votes this year in the midterm elections. The first chance for all voters in all 50 states to have a say on how they're enjoying the golden age of America. My guess is not so much. At least based on the polling numbers that showed Trump with the worst numbers of pretty much any president at this point in his presidency, with maybe the exception of Donald Trump's first term. And I know I can hear many of our listeners out there already, well, Brad, you're assuming there will be an election this year and that Donald Trump won't cancel it. But yes, you are right. Yes, I am assuming there will be an election this year. But Trump keeps telling us that he might cancel the election. He might invoke the Insurrection Act, which allows him to cancel the election. Well, he may invoke the Insurrection Act, Because when tyrannical authoritarians feel that they are failing and losing power, which he is, well, they try to do that sort of thing. But the Insurrection Act has nothing to do with canceling an election, which, and let me be clear about this, the president has no power to do. None. Zero. I want to make sure everyone hears that because I know people are freaking out about it, but the president has no such power to cancel elections. I've heard from some of you folks out there freaking out yet again following a recent comment that Trump made to Reuters in an interview last week, which out of context do not sound good, I admit. I usually try to ignore this kind of stuff because it just, you know, it's meant to freak people out. But it's nonsense. He said, quote, "We shouldn't even have an election." He told Reuters. Now, in full context, it's only slightly less disturbing, as Reuters reported late last week. Quote, "The president expressed frustration that his Republican Party could lose control of the U.S. House of Representatives or the Senate in this year's midterm elections, citing historical trends that have seen the party in power lose seats in the second year of a presidency." Well, let's hope so. In response, Trump said, quote, "It's some deep psychological thing, but when you win the presidency, you don't win the midterms," Trump said. He boasted that he had accomplished so much that, quote, "When you think of it, we shouldn't even have an election." Sure, Donnie. So listen, he can say whatever it is that he wants. He likes trolling us. And I realize that it freaks people out, which is largely why he says it. But nothing gives him the legal or constitutional authority to cancel our elections in some 10,000 voting jurisdictions across the country, which run their own elections without the federal government, which has no authority regarding whether elections, even federal elections for the House and the Senate, are held. They are still held at the state level, and they will be held this year. Trump has no authority over those state, county, local, and municipal election jurisdictions, even if that doesn't mean he won't try to steal that authority. But honestly, while I put nothing past his corrupt U.S. Supreme Court justices, I'd be surprised if even they, his own hand-picked, corrupted U.S. Supreme Court, would go along with that idea. For the record, even during the American Civil War, much less some random Insurrection Act declaration that Donald Trump decides to invoke somewhere, even when all of America was at war with itself, we managed to hold elections across the country. That, for the record, is when we first began using absentee voting. Vote by mail, so that troops who were in the battlefield far from home would still be able to cast their vote in their own jurisdictions back home. And yes, if Trump continues to spiral into madness, we could be in a civil war, or at this rate, a world war by the time we get to November. I'm not ignoring or downplaying any of those possibilities. As I've said many times on this show, things are going to get worse and uglier and more dangerous and scarier before they get better. But that's because Donald Trump is becoming weaker and weaker by the day, and he knows it. So he's lashing out. But vote-by-mail voting, it is that type of voting that the Trump administration, among others, is seeking to prevent, largely because he knows, Republicans know, that while it did not used to be the case just a few short years ago, now it is, that more Democrats cast their vote via absentee ballot than do Republicans. It used to be the other way around. So now the Republicans' answer to that is to try and restrict absentee voting however possible. And one way is to claim that it is rife with fraud and it needs to be somehow restricted, despite all of the evidence to the contrary regarding whether vote by mail is rife with fraud. But of course, that's why the DOJ is hoping to get state voting records so that they can trump up a whole bunch of fraud from those records, whether that fraud actually exists or not. And to that end, the courts, at least the lower courts, are holding steady, at least for now. A federal judge late last week dealt what NBC News is describing as a significant legal setback to the Trump administration in its efforts to obtain voter data held by states. That's state voter data. As you likely know by now, the Trump administration has instructed states to turn over its state voter rolls to the federal government and has sued those mostly democratically controlled states who have not done so. Federal government, of course, has no legal right to access that state data, which often contains personal information, sensitive information, social security numbers, birth dates, home addresses, and so forth. That data is available in many cases for purchase from the states by political campaigns, advocacy groups, and so forth, though those records that have data like social security numbers and other private information, that information is withheld when a campaign purchases voter data. The Trump administration wants everything. And to that end, it has sued the states who do not cooperate. It is on that point that the administration lost bigly in federal court again late last week.
Good.
Yes. In a 33-page order, U.S. District Judge David O. Carter in California dismissed a lawsuit that sought to give the Justice Department access to the Democratic-led states' voter files, including records like Social Security numbers and driver's license information, etc. California is one of 23 states, along with Washington, D.C., that the DOJ has sued for refusing to hand over the voter data, which, as the judge in California ruled last week, they have no legal right to demand. So he tossed out the suit. The lawsuit against California was filed by the DOJ last September. Attorney General Pam Bondi said in a statement at the time, quote, "Clean voter rolls are the foundation of free and fair elections." She suggested the rolls were full of fraudulent voter records, despite no evidence to support those claims beyond years of evidence-free false claims by Donald Trump and outlets like Fox News and the voter fraud fraudster clown groups like True the Vote, which has been making false claims about voter fraud for years now. And every single time it does, they step on a huge old rake straight into their face when it turns out that True the Vote is actually the one promulgating the fraud, not the voters in the voter rolls or at the polling place. But Pam Bondi continued last September in her statement, quote, "Every state has a responsibility to ensure that voter registration records are accurate, accessible, and secure. States that don't fulfill that obligation will see this Department of Justice in court." Well, California, at least, has now seen the Department of Justice in court, and the federal judge told DOJ to take a hike. "You have no right to the voter database information in question," the judge said. Judge Carter, a Clinton appointee, slammed the DOJ efforts in his ruling Thursday, writing that the administration's request, quote, "threatens the right to vote, which is the cornerstone of American democracy." Quote, "The Department of Justice seeks to use civil rights legislation, which was enacted for an entirely different purpose, to amass and retain an unprecedented amount of confidential voter data," Judge Carter wrote. "The centralization of this information by the federal government would have a chilling effect on voter registration, which would inevitably lead to decreasing voter turnout as voters fear that their information is being used for some inappropriate or unlawful purpose." The ACLU and other groups involved in the case praised the ruling in a joint statement. They said, quote, "The court has recognized the fundamental importance of protecting voters' sensitive personal information and dismissed this illegal federal overreach." According to the statement, quote, "Voters should never have to choose between their privacy and their fundamental right to vote. Today's ruling affirms that the federal government is not entitled to unfettered access to private voter data."
Good. Glad to hear it.
Yeah, and that's one of those stories when they were, pushing the states to turn over their voter rolls that I did not spend a lot of time on because there was a lot of other stuff going on that actually is worth concerning oneself about, where, it just seemed they have no route to actually get at this data. We will see if the Supreme Court, you know, feels differently about it down the road. But they are losing these cases in court. In a separate case, a federal judge in Oregon said last Wednesday that he was tentatively planning to dismiss the Justice Department's lawsuit in that state, but that he would issue his final decision in a written opinion in the near future. The Justice Department says it wants to use the registration records to, quote, help states, quote, clean their rolls by comparing it to other data sets held by the government that, according to the public comments from the Assistant Attorney General, Harmeet Dhillon, who was appointed by Trump to head the department's civil rights division. Dhillon, by the way, has no experience as a federal prosecutor. She spent years as an activist, right-wing voter fraud fraudster. She supported Trump's lawsuits challenging the 2020 election, which were tossed out of court. She supported January 6 insurrectionists. You get the idea. So voters, voter advocates and election experts warn of the potential for sloppy purges that risk disenfranchising eligible voters instead of what it is that the DOJ is claiming to do. They have also raised concerns that the data will be shared with other agencies beyond the DOJ to be used for other nefarious purposes. The DOJ has been working with the Department of Homeland Security, for example, on plans to review state voter registration files for evidence of non-citizens on the rolls. CNN reports, citing a source familiar with the Trump administration discussions, states have provided the Justice Department with some of the information it has sought. Most states, most state election officials, though, including some Republicans, have resisted turning over the sensitive fields of data like birth dates, Social Security numbers, and so forth. Nearly all of the career experts in the department's voting section have now left, or they were pushed out in the early months of the second Trump administration. The quest for voter data, CNN notes, has been carried out while the DOJ voting section has only a bare-bones staff, and it's led mostly by attorneys hired by Donald Trump in his second term. Some of those attorneys previously worked for right-wing groups that sued state and local election officials over their refusal to share certain voter roll data. All of this relies on misused provisions of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And in the bargain, it turns the Jim Crow era law adopted to protect black voters and other minority voters from disenfranchisement. It turns it all on its head, and the courts ain't buying it. Dhillon, she touted in a recent podcast interview with some right-winger, she touted the Civil Rights Act and its broadly worded language, saying, quote, "The attorney general doesn't have to show her homework as to what she's going to do with it, and I am her designee. So I get to ask for that information, and they have to give it," she said. Well, it turns out Judge Carter, at least in California, has disagreed, saying the DOJ has not satisfied the law's requirement that the AG give both a purpose and a basis for the records demand, a requirement that is, quote, "a critical safeguard that ensures the request is legitimately related to the purpose of the statute, not just for any old reason that you feel like it, Dhillon." Judge Carter wrote, "Without these requirements, the DOJ could embark on a fishing expedition of voter records in any state looking for concerns without identifying a single issue with the state's policies beforehand. They can only request that information if they believe that somehow the states are violating the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
So the judge was on to their silly, stupid little unlawful tactic.
Yep. The task of maintaining voter registration files and making sure only eligible voters are on the rolls is done, CNN notes, by the state and local election officials, not by the federal government. The federal law merely puts guardrails on the process to prevent eligible voters from being removed from the rolls, not the opposite. Still, the DOJ contended in its case against Michigan last month for the same thing, without citing any specific laws, that the federal government had, quote, "special standing under federal election statutes to conduct list maintenance." It doesn't. They lied to the court, as they have done over and over and over again in case after case after case on everything from these voter roll cases to their Nazi-esque mass deportation schemes. A Homeland Security spokesman said in a statement cited by CNN's Tierney Sneed, quote, voting in American elections is a right guaranteed solely to citizens. Under the leadership of Secretary Kristi Noem, DHS will take all steps needed to ensure that only U.S. citizens participate in the electoral franchise, which sounds like a fine idea, but that's already happening, at least according to the administration's own rules. It is only U.S. citizens that are participating in the electoral franchise by and large, and the efforts made to supposedly remove those who are not U.S. citizens is largely a pretext to try and remove many more people who actually are actual citizens from the rolls. So last week, the day before Judge Carter's ruling in California, the New York Times published an article finding that the administration's review of voter rolls to date has found no evidence of the widespread fraud that they have claimed, despite years and at this point decades of claims to the contrary made by Republicans like Donald Trump and his right-wing supporters. Remember, the Trump campaign in 2024 claimed over and over again that the Biden administration was purposely encouraging mass numbers of immigrants to cross the border in order to vote illegally in our elections, resulting in the second Trump administration prompting states to upload all of those tens of millions of voter records through a federal immigration verification tool that is run out of the Department of Homeland Security. So they pretended, as Trump did, that, oh, the reason Joe Biden is bringing all these migrants here, he wasn't bringing them here, they were coming on their own, but the reason that all of them were coming, being brought by Democrats, as it was described, was so they could vote in the election. Well, apparently they did a crap job of it, because it turns out Donald Trump won the election. But anyway, after he took office, he said, all right, let's run all of those voter registration databases through this tool at the Department of Homeland Security. But as the Times reports, with that review underway, the results so far indicate there is no evidence of any widespread fraud. That, according to interviews with government officials and documents reviewed by the New York Times, out of 49.5 million voter registrations that have been checked by states using this federal tool, this federal database, the department referred around 10,000 cases to Homeland Security investigations for further investigation of non-citizenship. Now, 10,000 may seem like a whole lot, but three things to remember. In fact, that is actually 0.02% of the names in the records that have so far been uploaded. That's 0.02% have been found to be possibly fraudulent, possibly non-citizens. Moreover, the tool that is being used is not actually meant for this purpose, and it often returns false positives of people who now are actually U.S. citizens, but have not yet been updated as such in this particular federal database in question. And a third thing to keep in mind, the officials who cited that 10,000 number, if you believe them, and I see no reason to do so, in fact, but even if you believe them, they did not specify how many of those people had actually voted in any election. As I have explained many times over and over over the years, people often go to the DMV to get a driver's license, for instance. People that may be here perfectly legally, for example, with a green card, but who are not citizens. And we have seen many, many, many cases of people over the years who are handed a fistful of forms to fill out at the DMV, who are mistakenly given a voter registration file. They fill it out and they never vote. In fact, they never even realize that they are incorrectly registered to do so. So even if you trust that 10,000 number that 0.02% of the voter records requests. And you shouldn't trust anything, obviously, you should know by now, coming out from this administration. But even that number is almost certainly inflated for all of those aforementioned reasons. So to give you an idea of the infinitesimal number that we're talking about here, even if everything about the claims from the Trump administration was true, in Charlotte County, Florida, for instance, the election supervisor, Leah Valenti, she's an appointee of Ron DeSantis, the Republican governor, and one of the voter fraud fraudsters out there on the right. So Leah Valenti, the election supervisor in Charlotte County, Florida, said she found that just 15 out of 176,000 names that she uploaded to DHS came back as non-citizens. And of those 15, she found so far that three of them were people mistakenly added to the rolls who never intended to register to vote. They have since been removed. Two others already sent in documentation to prove their naturalized citizenship, she said. Quote, we didn't get a mass onslaught of people, said Valenti. She's a proponent, by the way, of using the DHS system to verify voter eligibility. We have clean voter rolls, she said. So at best, there are 10 names that may be non-citizens that may be voted or maybe not, and maybe they're not even citizens, out of 176,000 names that were uploaded from the voter rolls in Charlotte County. That's kind of how this works. And the Times notes that while the findings affirm that non-citizens do sometimes end up on the voter rolls, the tiny numbers so far puncture the claims that Trump and his allies have made for the past decade that elections are riddled with illegal votes cast by undocumented immigrants. Remember after the first election, his first election in 2016, when he claimed that in California that he actually won California? Remember that?
Yes.
But for the 3 to 5 million fraudulent votes that were cast by non-citizens in California. Enough to suggest that he, as he claimed, actually won the state of California back in 2016, which, of course, could not be more preposterous. But because Trump believes it, or pretends to believe it anyway, because he can never concede that he lost anything anywhere at any time, well, the administration has had to play along with this charade, even though years of studies have consistently shown little, if any, evidence for such crimes on any type of large scale.
But they do, the Trump administration, they do get their headlines that mislead the public.
Yep.
And of course, the corporate media is very happy to platform those lies, which, you know, even if later on the actual evidence doesn't prove anything, does the public ever actually hear that part?
Well, exactly. And that's why I wanted to point this out. I do it, I guess, in the reverse. I try not to scream out the headlines about what Donald Trump is demanding or, you know, what nonsense
claiming,
they're doing when we know it's nonsense. But I'm happy to point it out when their efforts go south, as we are now seeing here, based on the Trump administration's own data. Quote, I would say a single illegal ballot is one too many, said Jason Sneed. He leads the so-called Honest Elections Project, a Republican elections group, and I would agree with Sneed there. But the issue is not about protecting fraudulent voters or something. The issue is how many lawful ones are you willing and even eager to remove from the rolls in order to find the handful of fraudulent votes? If you stop a single illegal ballot from getting cast, but disenfranchise hundreds or thousands of voters to do so, what have you done? You have undermined democracy itself, which, of course, is ultimately the goal of these authoritarians who actually hate democracy. Just look at their gerrymanders and their restrictive photo ID rules, and oh, yeah, the decades of efforts to stop certain lawful voters from being able to register or vote at all. One more example. In Missouri, 70 county clerks in December signed a letter. The red state of Missouri signed a letter to state House and Senate leadership describing the so-called systematic alien verification for entitlements, or SAVE, database from DHS that states and localities are now being asked to use. They wrote a letter to Congress saying that that database is flawed, saying that it regularly included, quote, individuals we know to be U.S. citizens, our neighbors, colleagues, and even voters we have personally registered at naturalization ceremonies. 70 county clerks in Missouri. St. Louis County, Missouri, found that around 35% of roughly 690 people initially flagged by the SAVE tool were actually registered at naturalization ceremonies. That, according to Rick Stream, the Republican election director of St. Louis County, Missouri, my old home county. In Republican-controlled South Carolina, a top election official emailed a wide array of federal agencies expressing confusion over the tool after seeing preliminary results back in July, writing, quote, unfortunately, the information has raised more questions than it has answered, she said. In the red state of Louisiana, the system found 403 supposed non-citizens out of 3 million registered voters. That's about 0.01%. The Secretary of State down in Louisiana, Nancy Landry, a Republican, in a public statement in September, said, quote, I want to be clear, non-citizens illegally registering or voting is not a systemic problem in Louisiana. And by the way, according to Politico, late this afternoon, yes, the administration is misusing data, databases, personal, private information that they have gained access to, just as many privacy experts have long feared and warned. According to Kyle Chaney at Politico on Tuesday, two members of Elon Musk's Doge team working at the Social Security Administration were secretly in touch with an advocacy group seeking to, quote, overturn election results in certain states. And one signed an agreement that may have involved using Social Security data to match state voter rolls, the Justice Department revealed in newly disclosed court papers. Elizabeth Shapiro, a top Justice Department official, said the Social Security Administration, or SSA, referred both DOGE employees for potential violations of the Hatch Act, which bars government employees from using their official positions for political purposes. Shapiro's previously unreported disclosure, dated last Friday, came as part of a list of, quote, corrections to testimony by top SSA officials during last year's legal battles over DOGE's access to Social Security data.
That only took several months.
Right. They revealed that DOGE team members, in fact, shared data on unapproved third-party servers and may have accessed private information that had been ruled off-limits by a court at the time. So not only were privacy experts right to fear this would happen, and not only did a judge try to prevent this from happening, the DOGE bros, they did it anyway. And federal officials appear to have lied about it previously in court testimony, leading to Friday's, well, better late than never, I guess, corrections. Shapiro, the spokesperson at DOJ, conceded the case of the two DOGE team members that it appeared to undermine previous assertions by SSA that DOGE's work was intended to, quote, detect fraud, waste, and abuse in Social Security and modernize the agency's technology. Well, I guess we found the fraud, waste, and abuse, but it was being carried out by DOGE itself. We are all shocked, aren't we? Quote, SSA believed those statements to be accurate at the time they were made, and they are largely still accurate, Shapiro wrote, adding, at this time, there's no evidence that SSA employees outside of the involved members of the DOGE team were aware of the communications with the advocacy group, nor were they aware of the so-called voter data agreement that was apparently discussed. Shapiro is a longtime DOJ veteran, so she's not necessarily one of the Trump cultists. She said it's not clear whether either of the two Doge team members who are not identified in her filing, if they actually shared data with the advocacy group or if they just discussed it. That advocacy group is also unidentified. I'm going to guess truth vote. Just a guess. But Shapiro did say that emails, quote, suggest that Doge team members could have been asked to assist the group by accessing SSA data to match to voter rolls. Shapiro also revealed that Steve Davis, a senior advisor to Elon Musk and the Doge team, was copied on a March 3, 2025 email that included a password-protected file containing private information of about 1,000 people contained in Social Security systems. It's unclear, she said, whether Davis ever accessed the file. And Shapiro said that current SSA employees have been unable to access the file to determine precisely what it contained.
Oh, great.
Because of presumably that password that the Doge bros had created and placed on it.
Wonderful.
Though SSA stands by its claims that Doge, quote, never had access to SSA systems of record, unquote. It is possible that some of the restricted data, quote, derived from Social Security systems was sent to Davis, according to Shapiro. So they didn't have access to the full system, supposedly, but they had enough access to pull a subset of records from that system, slap a password on it, and start emailing it around in violation of law and for unknown purposes, as a right-wing voter fraud advocacy group had been asking them to do for certain records.
Good Lord.
Shapiro also revealed that despite prior assertions in court, SSA's Doge team members were, quote, using links to share data through a third-party server called Cloudflare, a server company that's not approved for storing SSA data. And when used in this manner, it is outside of the SSA security protocols, said Shapiro. SSA did not know until its recent review that the Doge team members were using Cloudflare during this period. Because Cloudflare is a third-party entity, SSA has not been able to determine exactly what data were shared to Cloudflare or whether the data still exists today on the server. How much of it is there, and is it still there? Who knows? We don't know. That's Doge rooting out that waste, fraud, and abuse. But, of course, they are worried about you voting fraudulently. Sure they are. Let's take a quick break here. We will come back with some fraud that the Trump administration has been perpetrating themselves on the courts, at least according to a ruling today by a Trump-appointed judge. Go figure. That and Desi Doyen's GNR are all straight ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
It's unclear who the law is in this case. It's the law versus the courts. I don't know. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Desi Doyen and the Green News Report coming up shortly. But a follow-up story today. More bad news from the courts for the unspeakably corrupt Trump administration today. This is a follow-up to a story that we covered, I think it was last week. Federal judge in the Eastern District of Virginia has barred Lindsey Halligan, Trump's personal tax lawyer, from continuing to identify herself as a U.S. attorney in all legal matters in what MS now describes as a fiery 18-page order issued on Tuesday. Judge David Novak, who is an appointee of President Donald Trump, condemned Halligan for continuing to misrepresent herself as the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia before his court and on government documents after a judge last November ruled that Halligan had been appointed to the position unlawfully. Novak ordered Halligan to immediately drop the U.S. attorney title from all future legal filings, saying that she has, quote, no legal basis to hold the position and that, quote, any such representation going forward can only be described as a false statement made to the court in direct defiance of valid court orders. Last week, the judge directed that Halligan, quote, explain why her identification does not constitute a false or misleading statement to the court, and that why it was not in violation of attorney ethics rules that prohibit knowingly making, quote, false statements of fact or law to a tribunal. The order on Tuesday, which came after Halligan's explanation for her continued use of the title, despite the other judge's order back in November, the new order on Tuesday demands that U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi and Deputy U.S. Attorney General Todd Blanche, that's one of Trump's personal criminal lawyers appointed to that post, that both Bondi and Blanche be given the same direction after they appeared as signatories on Halligan's explanation for her behavior. An obnoxious explanation that one of them, likely Blanche, I suspect, clearly wrote himself, even though the judge had ordered Halligan to sign any such declaration that she submitted in response to the judge's order last week, demanding to know why she was still doing this. As our friend attorney Keith Barber notes today at Daily Coast, quote, the shrillness of that response eclipsed any legal reasoning within it, referring to the response from DOJ. As the Trump administration wrote in, as the Trump judge wrote in his order today, quote, Ms. Halligan's response, in which she was joined by both the attorney general and the deputy attorney general, contains a level of vitriol more appropriate for a cable news talk show and falls far beneath the level of advocacy expected from litigants in this court, particularly from the Department of Justice. Novak had given Halligan just 7 days to explain to the court why she had continued to identify herself as the USA, despite that November order from that other judge. In her obnoxious response, Halligan, or more likely Blanche, called the court, quote, flat wrong for ordering that her title was unlawful and held that she had not, quote, misrepresented her title in any way, as the judge had insisted. It was really rather a remarkable response. It really was like what you would expect to hear on Fox News as opposed to a court document.
Or from a toddler, maybe.
Exactly. Although a very smart toddler,
yeah,
I would
true.
Say.
But, okay, a five-year-old.
So, you know, where they're in these court documents, you know, there used to be at least a level of decorum and cordiality. Not anymore. Not with this crew. Finding, quote, this charade of Ms. Halligan masquerading as the United States attorney for this district in direct defiance of binding court orders must come to an end, Judge Novak wrote, also promising disciplinary actions against Halligan and the Justice Department or any other signatories, sanctions of some sort if they, quote, persist in ignoring the court's orders. The judge, Keith Barber notes, then turned to the question of whether Halligan should be referred to her state bar for disciplinary action.
Good.
But the judge, said Barber, decided to show mercy on grounds that Halligan is incompetent and in over her head, citing the judge's remarks, quote, the court recognizes that Ms. Halligan lacks the prosecutorial experience that has long been the norm for those nominated to the position of United States attorney in this district. Consequently, and in light of her inexperience, the court grants Ms. Halligan the benefits of the doubt and refrains from referring her for further investigation and disciplinary action regarding her misrepresentation to this court at this time. So,
giving her benefit of the doubt and grace that she did not extend to anybody else.
That she did not extend to anybody else, giving her the grace, letting her off the hook because she's stupid. However, Judge Novak made clear that Halligan was now on notice and that any future violations, quote, the court will initiate disciplinary proceedings against Ms. Halligan. So she got her one freebie. You may recall that back in November of last year, U.S. District Judge Cameron Curry ruled that Halligan's service as U.S. attorney was unlawful and unconstitutional. And the indictments that she had brought against Trump's political rivals, former FBI Director James Comey and New York Attorney General Tish James, were both invalid because of that. Bondi and Blanche decried that decision back in November as, quote, unconscionable campaign of bias against Halligan. Quote, we will not be deterred by rogue judges who fail to live up to their obligation of impartiality because of their own political views, said Bondi of the federal judges, I guess all of them in the district at the time, after they dared question the Justice Department for continuing to list Halligan as U.S. attorney on court documents after the November ruling. So I guess this Judge Novak, appointed by Donald Trump, is a rogue judge with the biased political views against Donald Trump. Bondi initially appointed Halligan to serve as the interim U.S. attorney last September, but that was after Trump's first pick, Eric Siebert, had resigned, refusing the pressure from Donald Trump himself to prosecute Tish James over trumped-up mortgage fraud allegations. Within days of assuming the position then, Halligan secured a criminal indictment against Comey, then got one against James, and then both were thrown out after Halligan's appointment was found to be unconstitutional. Since then, grand juries have repeatedly declined to reindict both James and Comey. And, you know, grand juries back in the before times, they were notorious for being willing to indict anybody to whom a prosecutor presented a case. The old, you know, the old saw about prosecutors can get a grand jury to indict a ham sandwich. Well, not anymore, apparently. And that is good news, at least. But the statute that was invoked by the Trump administration in order to appoint Halligan, that statute is quite clear. It allows an interim U.S. attorney to serve for only 120 days. While we're waiting for the Senate to approve any particular appointee. And since Siebert was already the interim appointee before he was pushed out because he wouldn't indict James, well, Judge Curry last November found that the 120-day clock had actually begun when Siebert was appointed back in January of 2025. So time had already run out by the time Halligan assumed the position. We were already beyond 120 days as of September 22, when Halligan was appointed. So Bondi actually didn't have the authority to appoint her as the interim U.S. attorney at the time. Judge Novak's Tuesday order said, quote, in terms that could not have been clearer, Judge Curry held that Ms. Halligan's appointment as interim U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Virginia was invalid and that Halligan has been unlawfully serving in that role since she was appointed in September of 2025. And in response to all of this on Tuesday, the chief judge in the district, Chief Judge, U.S. District Judge Hannah Lauck, launched the official search for Halligan's successor. The court, it turns out, holds the authority to appoint an interim U.S. attorney to serve until the Senate confirms a presidential nominee. But sources close to the decision told MS Now that the court had hesitated to do so previously due to concerns that Bondi would immediately fire any Justice Department attorney that they elevated to the position. You know, they'd be inclined to take someone who worked in the office already, make them U.S. attorney, but they knew that Bondi would then fire them because that's what she has done in other such districts. But, as it turns out, Bondi does not have the authority to fire an appointee if the court makes a selection from outside of the Justice Department.
Okay.
So that's what they have begun to do now.
Better late than never.
Yeah. Judge Novak said his order does not prevent Halligan from entering an appearance or signing her name to pleadings as a special attorney, as Bondi has also named her in the district, but she just can't call herself a U.S. attorney. She can call herself, quote, a special attorney whatever that title may mean, said the judge. But she's no longer the ultimate authority in that very busy prosecutor's office just outside of D.C., at least according to two federal judges now in that district, one of whom was appointed by Donald Trump himself. So Trump thinks he's king. He thinks he and his administration can get away with anything. They can get away with a lot, but no, not everything, and not as long as the courts still hold, at least at the lower level. He is not a dictator yet. He's still a wannabe dictator, and I have every reason to believe that we, the people, have so far stopped him, or at least greatly limited his power, and that we, the people, will really make some headway in that department come November. So hang in there. GNR is next, which, you know, stands for Good News Radio. That's next. I'm Brad, and this is The Bradcast. You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported thanks to listeners like you who stop by bradblog.com/donate. All right, Desi Duane, you ready?
Yes.
Take us home with our latest Green News Report.
83% of those losses happened in the United States.
Insured losses from wildfires, storms, and floods hit new record high in 2025. National disaster declared as wildfires ravage southern Chile. Plus,
it comes just weeks after the Trump administration froze five big offshore wind projects on the East Coast.
Federal courts continue to reject Trump's irrational attack on American offshore wind energy.
All of those wins and losses and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
No one wants power outages, but the intermittent sources of wind and solar are part of the problem on the reliability. When the wind is blowing and the sun is shining, that's often not the time when we are at risk.
Right. The time we're at risk is when Energy Secretary Doug Burgum is lying to the American people about big rechargeable batteries that he likes to pretend don't exist. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Duane, you'd think the Trump administration would, if nothing else, pay attention to the growing cost of our climate crisis and want to do something about that, but no, they don't care about that either, apparently.
No, apparently not, and it is getting worse. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, down in the global south, where Chile's president has declared a state of catastrophe amid deadly, destructive, extreme weather intensified by man-made climate change. As we go to air, extreme heat and wind-driven wildfires have killed at least 18 people, destroyed hundreds of homes, and forced the evacuation of more than 50,000 people in two southern regions. Chile has seen a series of devastating fires in recent years, worsened by long-term drought. South Africa has also declared a national disaster after torrential rains and floods killed more than 100 people. Globally, insured losses from wildfires, storms, and floods hit a record high in 2025. A new analysis from global reinsurer Munich Re estimated that overall insured losses from extreme weather disasters hit a record $108 billion globally last year. 83% of those losses were in the United States.
83% of those losses were right here.
Yep, last year's L.A. County wildfires were the costliest disaster of 2025. Again, that's only insured losses. The researchers warn that the threat of extreme weather disasters has risen steadily in recent years, roiling insurance markets. The new damage report comes just days after the European Union's Copernicus Climate Change Service announced that 2025 was the third hottest year on record after 2024 and 2023. Here's Samantha Burgess, Copernicus Deputy Director.
The scientific evidence is overwhelmingly clear. Climate change is happening. It's here. It's impacting everyone all around the world. And it's our fault. We know what we need to do. We have the technological solutions. We can limit future warming.
The scientific evidence is clear. It's been clear for quite a while, but now the insurance and financial evidence is clear. Again, you'd think that even Donald Trump would give a damn about that.
Well, here in the U.S., a new analysis calculates that the Trump administration's policy requiring all new clean energy projects to be personally approved by Energy Secretary Doug Burgum has halted more than 22 gigawatts of cheaper, faster clean energy projects, undercutting efforts to address skyrocketing energy prices for consumers and soaring demand due in part to the proliferation of data centers.
Go figure.
However, the Financial Times reports that renewable energy is, quote, proving hard to kill. While the U.S. clean energy industry has clearly taken a major hit from the Trump administration, the Federal Energy Information Administration still projects that over the next 2 years, solar generation will grow by 50% in the U.S.
Somebody's about to be fired over there.
That's continuing the long-term trend of cheaper, clean, renewable electricity displacing fossil fuel energy sources. Why? Because a photovoltaic solar farm can be built and activated in less than a year, a fraction of the several years it takes to construct a natural gas plant. And finally, federal courts have ordered two more offshore wind projects to resume construction. Back in December, the Trump administration suspended five critical offshore wind projects that were near completion. Courts have now restarted three of them off of Rhode Island, New York, and now Virginia. Judges have expressed skepticism of the Trump administration's newfound concern that wind turbines could generate radar interference. The developers noted that those issues were addressed during the permitting process, and the Defense Department signed off on all five of the projects before construction began. The two remaining offshore wind farms halted by the administration are now in court. If completed, all five wind projects would bring cheap, clean electricity to millions of ratepayers across the East Coast.
Good news. For much more on all of those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Stay the course in the changing sea. Tides turning, waves are churning.
See there?
Yeah.
Well, I told you GNR means good news radio. That's all it ever has meant. And once again, another loss for the Trump administration.
Yay, indeed.
A good one. Thank you very much, Desi Doyen, our producer. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, download it for free anytime at brandblog.com. That service made possible by those of you kind enough. And thank you in advance to those of you who hit a donate button or go straight to brandblog.com/donate. To keep us on your public airwaves in this critical election year, drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the social medias, Desi Doyen is Green News Report.
Yep.
And I am The Brad Blog. See you there. Till we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
See the course, you can't turn back. You might get scared, might get home. All right.